All right, we're going to try to get him. All right, Sir Curtly, are you with us? All right, maybe because Tony Gray came on, Sir Curtly Ambrose has gotten scared. You tend to do that to people.
What is Tony?
Yes, Tony? Tony Rapford?
How do you think things are in New Zealand, Tony?
Pardon me?
How do you think the T20 squad performed?
Well, they didn't perform at all. I think that it was very disappointed, knowing that we have the talent there, but they seem disjointed. And it you need to ask some questions about the preparation. Obviously, some players came from the IPL. They were in quarantine for a while. I don't think that Pollard was able to interface properly with his players. And a lot of the players, they were obviously very rusty. A lot of them didn't play T20 cricket in an intense situation for quite some time. And if you look and review the CPL, a lot of the players who are on the West Indies team now struggle in a CPL tournament that perhaps was the weakest where talent was concerned this year. So with that being said, a combination of things caused them to struggle against a well-organized New Zealand side that took us out of our comfort zone of playing in slow and low pitches and provided a very fast and bouncy track the first game around. And New Zealand is really well organized. They are very adept at planning properly and executed. And that's exactly what happened. But Pollard showed in that first game that he was properly prepared. I mean, if you're playing in the IPL and won against some of the best players in the world, and also against, you're batting against some of the best bowlers in the world in practice, Bumrah, you have Pattinson, you have Bolt, then you will be prepared. So I don't think that the team was prepared properly and they looked disjointed on the field of play.
What do you think about the bowling of young Paul during the series?
Well, the question came up a couple of weeks ago about Paul being on the test side, and I didn't agree with that at all, and you didn't agree with that at all, Doc. I think that he has gotten into some bad habits. I worked with him about 4 years ago with the West Indies on the 19 team during a regional 50-over tournament, and he was much better where consistency is concerned. But the misconception that he seemed to have in his head is that he has to bowl different types of delivery every delivery. And there's no thought process that is happening. He's not stopping and communicating with his captain or a senior player on the field of play. And he's just gotten in some bad habits. So he needs remedial work in a different way. He needs to be taken out of this this consistent variation that he wants to deliver. And he has to get a stock delivery. On that first game, for example, the pitch was fast and bouncy. You had to choose a Curtly Ambrose, a Sir Curtly Ambrose type of length that will create a lot of risk for batsmen playing shots and could be containing also. So they didn't stick to a game plan, obviously very up and down, in different lengths and lines, and you saw the result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he bowled 7 overs for 103 runs and took no wickets and went at 14.71. An economy rate of 14.71. And the bowling attack, if you look at bowlers who bowled more than a few overs, it was only Cottrell who went at 8.6 and Thomas who went at 9.7, and not many wickets. Thomas had the most wickets with only 3 wickets. So we had a penetration problem as well, Tony.
Yeah, definitely. And we have to rethink the way we play T20 cricket. A lot of times we do not make adjustment to the playing conditions. I mean, this was a very good seam bowling pitch. When I say seam bowling, it had pace and bounce. You can work with those two qualities of a pitch, all right, providing a bowling ball in the right areas. And we need to look at pace. I mean, Ricky Ponting some time back, mentioned that he wants wicket-taking bowlers in a T20 format. That's the way you slow down opposing sides, by taking wickets. And the mindset has to be like that. But taking wickets doesn't mean to say you have to bowl in different lengths and lines all of the time. You have to be patient, create pressure, and then maintain pressure on the opposing batsman.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just before Toby comes in, let's go to Sir Kirtley. Sir Kirtley, are you hearing us now? Sir Kirtley? All right. Something seems to be obviously wrong. Okay. We're going to try to solve that. Sir Kirtley? All right. Of course, our technical man will try and see what happens there. But Sir Kirtley is not hearing us, so we're going to try to solve that problem before the program ends. Toby Radford, you have been the batting coach to the West Indies side. What's wrong, though, with our batsmen? I mean, let's talk to about someone like a Shea Hope. Do you think that selectors, despite the fact that he didn't perform well in England, he should have been taken to New Zealand?
Well, look, I don't know what conversation they've had with him. I'm assuming they spoke to him before they decided not to take him. They may have felt that a break from the game, time away from the game, time to maybe go and work on his game would be the best thing for him. And sometimes that is for a player. I mean, that's, you know, it's a calculated decision because, you know, we know that at his best, and we've seen him at his best, that he's capable of winning test matches and getting, you know, getting big scores in any format. Clearly what's happened with him in the last few years is we've seen in white ball cricket where, you know, certainly in 50 over cricket, he's been one of the top players in the world. And while that sort of format of the game's really taken off, his red ball stats have gone the other way. But as I say, I'm sure they will have had a conversation and, you know, hopefully there was an agreement between them that he was going to use this time to A, get a little bit of time away from the game, refresh himself, but also probably work on one or two things. So when he does come back, he's a better player for him.
What is technical difficulties?
Surprise. Look, my feeling with Shea is, you know, we all know Shea's strengths are, you know, a very elegant player, you know, beautiful cover drives, back foot punches, clips through the leg side. Excellent in the white ball cricket where he's generally on the front foot mm-hmm. and you're only getting the one bouncer and over. If you do nick it, there's no slips and gullies. I think what really happened after he got the 200s against England in the test match in Headingley 2 or 3 years ago, we went to New Zealand, ironically, you know, which is a tough place to tour. So I completely understand, you know, how the side could be struggling at the moment because they are very well oiled and they're very good on their own pitches. But we went to New Zealand and it was quite clear that they weren't going to put anything in his half. He wasn't mm-hmm. going to get those lovely cover drives and clips. It was all going to be back of a length, aggressive, chest height, bouncer height. And from then on in, pretty much from that tour in New Zealand, right the way through, that's the way sides decided to bowl with him. Mm-hmm. And I think for Shea, you know, his red ball will really take off when he comes to term with the fact that he's going to get a lot more back foot stuff, that he's got to show that he's solid in there, that it doesn't matter what comes at him, head height, chest height, he's going to have a method for defending it and a method for scoring against it, because that's clearly where sides are going to go and that's where sides have gone. And I think while they've gone aggressive at him on the back foot, mm-hmm. they've pushed him back, and then when they've gone fuller, they've either nicked him off or they've got him LBW or they've found a way to get him out on the fuller ball that in years gone by wasn't really a problem for him. So I would like to think that if there's an area he's working on, and I'm not in touch with him, but I would like to think if there's an area where it's on that back foot stuff and being able to play that solidly. And when they then go fuller, I've got no problem. Like, you know, you can throw 3 or 4 bounces at me, but when you come fuller, I'm going to comfortably get back into the ball, no problem. And I think when he's at his best, that's what he's done. And in the last couple of years, they've kind of almost targeted those areas. That's what I feel. With
interesting. Just before Tony Greer comes in, yeah. I see he's shaking his head. What about Craig Brathwaite? What are his technical difficulties? You're the batting coach. You tell us. Craig Brathwaite.
Me?
Yes.
Craig? I think Craig's a very solid player. Craig gets stuck on the crease. And in England, Craig got stuck on the crease a couple of times. And, you know, if you get stuck on the crease, you're going to get LBW and you're going to fend at balls. And Craig is at his best when he's actually moving his feet and he's getting back into the ball. He's clearly started the New Zealand tour well. He got a 200 in the week in the warm-up game, so he's in good form. You know, and I'd like to think his feet are moving, getting in good positions. We all know with Craig, if he's in a good place, he can bat all day and get some big scores. So, you know, I've got every faith in Craig. I think he's, you know, he's a Shiv-like player. What you don't want from Craig is him getting stuck on the crease, because if he gets stuck on the crease and starts fending at balls, he's either getting trapped LBW or he's going to nick off behind. Mm. But he knows that, and I'm sure that's an area he's focusing on.
Tony, yeah, you agree?
Yeah, can I ask a question
sure.
to Mr. Radfield?
Hmm.
The back foot movement, I commented on it a couple of weeks ago on this program that the Junior Hades, the Gordon Greenwich, you know, these guys is not evident now in these players that represent the West Indies team. You talk about the LBW decision consistently was quite evident in England in that test series. Mm-hmm. And that's because guys were not moving their back foot. They were playing around the front pad and they were not mobile at the crease. How do you view the importance of the back foot movement?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mean a back foot like a trigger movement? So the back foot to get
a trigger movement back and across.
Yeah, I think, look, there's all different trigger movements. And to be honest, my feeling is always that whether it's a back foot movement or a double trigger, you know, and people employ different movements. For me, it's about a personal thing. But the key is when that ball is coming out of that hand at 90 mile an hour, you have to be in a position that can move quickly forward or quickly back. You have to be able to transfer your weight. Mm. And if you're getting stuck and you can't get forward and you're getting pinned on the crease, clearly you've got a problem with your weight distribution. What I thought, to be fair to England, I thought the two bowlers were outstanding, were Broad and Wokes. And what I thought they did really well was they would almost set the batter up. So they were kind of, you know, you'd have three or four balls, away swingers in the channel. They drag them across and then mm-hmm. they'd go wider the crease and then angle it back in.
Right.
And I thought it was quality bowling, but they were almost setting the batter up going across the wicket Ooh. Rather than down the wicket. And whenever you're going across, you're not getting in front. And when you get hit on the pad, the umpire's going to give you every time because your foot hasn't gone anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a combination of quality bowling, but batters, I think, allowing themselves to drift across the wicket rather than keep coming up and down the wicket, which is obviously where the game is played, you know?
Just before you come back in, Tony, I think we now have Sir Curtly Ambrose on the line. Sir Curtly, are you hearing us loud and clear?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, wonderful. It's good to have you. Of course, your very good friend, Tony Gray, is with us, and of course, Toby Radford. I'm sure you've met Toby Radford, have you? Toby?
Yes, I know
yes.
Toby, yeah.
Yes, we've met.
Good, wonderful. Now, interesting discussion. We're going to open the lines, of course, a little bit later on. So, currently, these guys are not playing well at all. You've been part of a West Indies side that did very, very well. How do you feel about all this, though? And what is your solution?
Well, first of all, it's very disheartening. You know, being a passionate West Indian who have played this game and still love West Indies cricket and have it at heart, it's very, very difficult for me personally to see the way West Indies cricket is going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you look back on where we once were and where we are now, I mean, it's very, very, very tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. I believe that we can change this around, but we have to, well, the guys who are in control, in authority, have to decide to make some serious decisions and stick with it for the cricket to move forward. I think that we are going about this thing too casual. Right? Guys can do what they feel, come into the team when they feel like,
mm-hmm.
go to play the trade to different franchises, leave West Indies cricket for dead, and then come back and walk straight back into the team. To me, that is a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
We got to show some sort of commitment, you know, for West Indies cricket. And I mean, we got to make some drastic and hard decisions and stick with it. And the cricket can get better.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point you're making because, you know, a lot of people are disappointed, Sir Curtly, in relation to someone like Andrew Russell, who said he had to clear his head. You know, he was offered to go to New Zealand and now he's playing in Sri Lanka. And the same thing with Simmons. I mean, you know, these guys, in my view, you know, I think you got to go past them now, I must admit.
Well, that only strengthens my point.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants to clear his head for a while and go home just to get his mind together. I have no problems with that. Because cricket, you know, is a high-pressure game. So if you want to clear your mind, get away from cricket for a while, I have no issue with that. But if you're going to reject playing for your nation, mm-hmm. your country, and then 2 weeks later, you're playing for somebody else's franchise, that to me is a no-no.
Right.
With the commitment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so what I'm saying, You can't want to clear your mind or your head or want a break from cricket in terms of West Indies, but then 1 week later you play with somebody else. Mm-hmm. To me, I mean, that tells me that you don't really want to play for West Indies. So if that's the case, just say so. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer eligible for selection. Mm-hmm. So we won't have to be wondering if you're available or not. Just say straight up as man, I'm not available. And let's move on. So I have a problem with that.
Hey, fantastic. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to come in on the back of what Sir Curly said. I totally agree with him. We're not seeing that with other teams. We're not seeing that with other sides. You know, the other teams are putting out their full international sides. You know, so it's very difficult then. You know, the result is still a West Indies team, and the public sees it, the supporters see it. But actually, as I said earlier, how many of the team that's just played, if there was a World Cup starting next week, I can guarantee you suddenly Andre Russell would be available. There would be players who haven't made themselves available for this tour who would suddenly be knocking on the door to want to play. And I think the big question is, in terms of those running the West Indies board, should they be allowing players to pick and choose? Because I don't see England doing it. I don't see South Africa doing it. I don't see Australia doing it. And I think it's affecting the results and the morale, and there is certainly results of the team and where the team is at the moment. Because I think when you put the best team on the park, you'll definitely be getting better results because you've got your best players out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. So currently, before you go, we're now joined by Sir Clive Lloyd, the big cat. Nice to see you, Sir Clive, looking as young as ever. But just before you go, Sir Curly, how are you?
Cheers, Andrew. Congratulations again.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. All right, Sir Curly, I know Sir Curly is very busy there in Antigua, and I'm sure he started his Christmas shop, and he's got to buy so many gifts for all these people, including the Prime Minister. Sir Curly, we're getting ready now for this test series, of course. It starts in terms of West Indian time tomorrow, 6 o'clock. That's Wednesday evening, 6 o'clock. If you're in Jamaica, 5 o'clock. What are your expectations? We did poorly in the T20. Do you think we can recover and win the test series, Sir Curly?
It is not going to be easy. New Zealand have a very good team. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I realize with New Zealand is that most other teams don't tend to look at them in the same way they look at an Australia or England or India, you know. Mm-hmm. But New Zealand always find a way to sneak in through the back door and disrupt the whole system. Mm-hmm. Look at the World Cup that was played in England, for instance.
Right.
No one gave them a chance, you know. But New Zealand are very, they don't have too many big stars, mm-hmm, like the India or the Australia or the England. But they play well together, and that's the key. They play well together and always find a way to win. In terms of West Indies, mm-hmm, I believe we can compete if, you know, the bowling, you know, does well. Right? That's one. Secondly, the batting must come to the party. And mm-hmm, in recent times, the batting has been failing quite a lot. You can't keep asking the bowlers to defend 150 and 200 and 250.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I believe that if the batting comes to the party and we can put up 350, 400 runs on the board in the first inning, I believe we'll be competitive. But we have to score runs. I believe the bowling may come good. Yeah? We can take 20 wickets. But the batting must come to the party and put runs on the board.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think we're going to win the series then, Sir Curly?
It's going to be tough. I honestly don't think we're going to win the series.
Mm-hmm.
If we come away with a draw,
mm-hmm,
it's going to be a big boost for West Indies cricket.
Right.
It's going to be difficult to win both test matches or to beat New Zealand. I got to be honest. But we can, if we come away with a drawn series,
mm-hmm,
whether it's 1-1 or 0-0, if we draw the series, it will be a confidence booster going forward.
Right. But Sir Curly, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and speaking to us on Mason and Guest. And just be careful with that Christmas shopping, because I understand you've got a lot of gifts to buy. Buy one for Tony Gray too, huh?
Yeah, let me say before I go, congratulations, Andrew.
Yes.
You know, I saw that in the media the other day.
Yes.
And I say congratulations, you know, keep the good work going. I know that it can be controversial, but you know your stuff.
All right. I want to thank you for your support. And of course, as a result of your coming to the show, that's why I won the award. You made it. You made it, Sir Curtly. All right. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, man, you too.
All right, good. So there we have it, Sir Curtly Ambus, from one sir to another. Sir Clive Lloyd, Hubert Lloyd. Sir Clive, how are you?
Too bad at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, talk to me, Sir Clive. You got Toby Radford. You know very well. You didn't play with Tony Gray. You might have managed him because Tony reckons that he's too young, really. When we look back at this series, Sir Clive, the T20 series, very disappointing. The West Indies couldn't win a game. It didn't look like winning a game. Well, at one stage in the first match, defending 179, New Zealand was 60-4, and then the game got away. What went wrong in the T20, Sir Clive?
I would think it's as usual, our batting. I think our youngsters think that this is T20 is just about going aerial. Mm. They think it's just sixes and you know, go to for the maximum. Nobody seems to want to hit the ball on the ground. I saw VVS Latchman hit 60 in about 20 something balls, and he hasn't hit the ball and over the top yet. He just pierced the field, mm-hmm. and we needed to do that. Although we lost those five wickets to one run, mm-hmm. we still got to 180. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine what we could have made if two of them had batted well? Mm-hmm. It's just that we're not consistent enough. And the point is that I think Toby just made a very good point there. You want to play your best team. Mm-hmm. You cannot have guys picking and choosing. Mm-hmm. The tours. If New Zealand signed a contract with their players for the last, you know, for 5 years, where they can go and play in any one-day competition, but when they have cricket at home, mm-hmm. they have to take part.
I agree with that.
And the point is that nobody wants. No, you know, you can't stop guys from earning money, because that's the first thing they say. When we signed for Kerry Packer, mm-hmm. we could still played for the West Indies, mm-hmm. but then they banned us. So the point is, we couldn't do that. But we didn't. We came back. We still played for the West Indies, and brought us, and we, you know, we retained the top position. So the point is that I know guys want to earn as much money as possible. But when they play for the West Indies, they're still earning money. Is it not that they're playing for free? So I think the board, as I said in the last time I was on, mm-hmm. that we have to work something out with the players. They have to sit down with the Cricket Association, you know, with the players and their representatives, and work out a system. We don't have 250 million people. We have 5 million people with different vocations. Mm-hmm. So we're only choosing from a small cadre of sportsmen. So when we lose all those guys, mm-hmm. When we've groomed them, and then we lose them for a while, then it takes another 3 or 4 years to groom another set. So it's like digging a hole to fill a hole. We have to be, you know, we have to get either very strong with these players and say, well, listen, you've been taught your cricket by the West Indies. Give something back to them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Toby, and we're going to go, of course, to Tony Gray as well. Very interesting discussion about the technical challenges. In fact, a lot of WhatsApp messages have been coming in. And they want to know what's the problem with John Campbell. Let's start with you, Tony Gray. His technical challenges, can you explain them? Tony, John Campbell, in England, he made what? Made 80 runs, I think, in the three test matches.
Right. When you look at John Campbell against England in the Caribbean, because obviously he's been brought up on West Indian pitches that are slow, a lack of movement, and it would bring about sometimes a false sense of performance. But he batted well. He was assertive. He was moving his feet a little bit more. I think that mobility is a very important factor with our batsmen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it showed up in the first T20 game where they weren't moving their feet at all to real pace. Mm-hmm. So what was happening internally, they had fear. I mean, Campbell is a very good batsman, but he needs to be a little bit more mobile and he needs to choose the right balls to hit. He's got to play with soft hands to remember the Jamaican batsmen. They push at the ball, they play through the line at the ball because of the state of the pitches in Jamaica. So he's got to learn to play with soft hands, allow the ball to come to him and pick up the line and sometimes leave the ball alone. But, you know, he can improve because he has the talent.
Toby, your assessment of the technical challenges of our good friend, Mr. Campbell from Jamaica?
Well, I first saw John when we played against England a couple of years ago, and he looked impressive when he first came in the team. He was getting to 30 easily and then getting himself out. He was getting 30s, 35s, but he looked at home. And exactly as we're just saying there, you know, his feet were moving. He cuts, he pulls, he drives. He's a typical left-hander. What he tends to be is a little bit loose outside off stump. And I think, you know, on those English wickets back in the summer, you know, Broad would come round the wicket. Some would swing in, some would nip away. And I don't think John really knew where his off stump was. But this was a new challenge for him. You know, those Caribbean pitches, it doesn't move as late as that. It doesn't move both ways like that. And I think what happens now, sometimes the players are playing on these slower Caribbean surfaces. They're not going and playing county cricket the way that they did in Sir Clive's day or, you know, Sir Viv would play. And they get used to playing good bowling on difficult pitches and techniques get tighter. So I think John got exposed a little bit on the quicker pitches, just nibbling around off stump, which he wouldn't necessarily be used to in the Caribbean. It doesn't make him a bad player. What it means is if he got exposed to that more often, he'd get used to it. You know, I still believe you need to be getting HPC teams, you need to be getting A teams on these tours because that's where your best young players need to be learning in those foreign conditions. I've just taken a job with Bangladesh, right? And the first thing I said to the guys in Bangladesh, look, we know you're good in Bangladesh. You can play spin. You know, you're very good bowling spin. But you need to perform in Perth. You need to perform in England. Mm-hmm. And the only way that those guys are going to get better is to go to England. So I'm going to look to take them as a team. And I think it's the same for the young West Indians. Get them into, you know, get them on tours to South Africa, Australia, England early on. So when they come into the test team, their game is technically ready to perform at test level. What you're having is the best players of domestic cricket going into international cricket against the world's best on their own surfaces. And for some of them, they're not used to it. And it's not fault of them. It's what, you know, they're not used to playing on them. So I would try and blood them a bit earlier. That's my feeling on it.
All right.
I think it's...
Tony, we just got to take a commercial break. Okay. Tony, you comment and then we'll go to the break.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point. But what I said time and time again is that we had not the systems of England, but we had the different types of pitches in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So Kensington Oval was quick and steaming. Mm-hmm. You had Guyana, you had to be a workmanlike, you know, it was easier for batsmen. You went to Jamaica, the ball skidded onto you. And the only thing that we could not simulate, the only conditions that we could not simulate is New Zealand and English conditions. Mm-hmm. Now, we played county cricket, so that compensated for everything. So that's why I said our batsmen, our bowlers were comprehensively prepared for international competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. I totally agree with that.
Let's pause for our business calls. When we come back, we're going to open the lines as well. I know many people want to talk to you, honourable gentlemen, but let's tell you that Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.